We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Fridays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/yttw and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/calltw. So you think.
Welcome to season 26, episode 26, airing on 6/26. You can't explain that. I'm Matt Delaney. Joining me this week, Jim Barrows. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. It's good to be on the show today.
It's been a while since we got to do a show together, so I'm excited. Yeah. This episode of The Atheist Experience is airing in a whole new world. For those people who've been living under a rock, the United States is now essentially a third world country, or on its way to be one. Really quickly, the Supreme Court basically threw out Roe v. Wade and Casey, which resulted in there being trigger laws taking place. And so there's only a handful of states now where abortion is still legal or not banned. And now the fight's going to be taken to the states. There's a lot more fighting to do. There's a lot of elections to take place. But the Supreme Court didn't just throw out Roe, and we knew that was going to happen. They also, in a case in Maine about school vouchers, ruled that if the state is going to have a voucher program where people can use tax dollars to send their kids to either public or private schools, they cannot exclude religious schools. And Maine had specifically excluded religious schools because that's a violation of the First Amendment. So the Establishment Clause is already being threatened. And in addition to that, your Miranda rights have just been diminished. Well, technically, your Miranda rights still exist. It's just that nobody has to read them to you anymore. It used to be the case that you needed to be read your Miranda rights and acknowledge that. And if they didn't, then anything that you said couldn't be used against you in a court of law. But now it can. You still have your right, but nobody has to tell you about it, which means we have to do a better job of informing people of their rights. And so while I am not speaking for anybody but me, I can tell you that for me personally, I will not speak to the police without a lawyer. It does me no good. Even if they come around knocking on the door to ask if I heard a disturbance in the neighborhood, my answer is going to be, I'm not going to speak to you without an attorney. And by the way, for the people who are going out and protesting these decisions, and primarily Roe, I'm sure, personal note for me as well, if you're protesting, please maintain the high ground. We need peaceful yet sufficiently disruptive protests, sufficiently disruptive to get attention. If you could merely be replaced by a sign, then you might not be doing much. But if you wind up arrested or sabotaging things for your side, then we'd be better off if you hadn't participated at all. Sometimes it's a difficult line to walk, but it is navigable and it's critical because there's a ton of work that has to be done. All these years talking about church-state separation, they're not going to stop with this is the cornerstone of privacy. Roe is the first domino to fall. After that, if you read the concurrent opinion from Justice Thomas, you'll see that they're ready to go after contraception and same-sex marriage and all the court rulings that resulted in that. This is the beginning of a new attack on civil liberties and on the separation of religion and government. And there's more, because I didn't even have time to bone up everything. Jim's got, what's happening near the border, Jim?
So if you live within 100 miles of the border, your rights are already decreased because you live within 100 miles of the border. And within 50, it's even worse. But the case was a civilian who was helping people cross the Canadian border was assaulted by a Border Patrol agent, and he sued. And so the Supreme Court said, no, you can't sue a officer, law enforcement officer, in pursuit of his duties for violating your civil rights or for assaulting you. And so they said, no, you can't do that, which basically means that they can assault you and you can't do anything about it. Now, if they assault you and get evidence, I mean, that's still fruit of the poisonous tree, et cetera. There's still those protections there, but they can just walk in and you provide the slightest bit of resistance to them coming in before you have a chance to realize it's law enforcement. and get assaulted, and there's nothing you can do. You have no recourse. Because what are you going to do? You're going to go to another police agency and have them arrest a Border Patrol agent? Nope. So, yeah, more rights going down in flames as things go on. So,
but we're here at the Atheist Experience, and that means that we have loads and loads of calls. And our first caller is calling in to say that atheists and ex-Christians don't exist, is my understanding. But we have John in California. Am I correct? Is this correct that you say atheists don't exist?
Well, I certainly believe the Bible's true, and I believe that the Bible's saying that atheists do not exist.
Okay, so you believe the Bible's true. The Bible says atheists don't exist. But in chat, you said that you know atheists like the back of your hand. So please explain how you can know something that doesn't exist like the back of your hand.
Very good question. When I say atheist, just like a Christian, I consider it someone who claims to lack a belief in God and chooses to identify as an atheist. So anyone who claims to disbelieve or lack belief in God and chooses to identify as an atheist, I will recognize as an atheist.
Yeah, so I claim that I do not believe that a God exists, and yet that makes me an atheist. And you say that I don't exist, mm-hmm. Or is what you're saying that I'm lying and I actually do believe in it?
Well, I would claim that maybe that you've been deceived. Maybe that it could be that, one is delusional, things like that. But not necessarily that they're lying, because the way I understand it, that people suppress the truth and unrighteousness. I'm sure you've heard that before.
I've heard a bunch of things before, and I'm happy to let you make your case. And so we've got this clock, which I'm going to start here briefly, which is going to give you a full minute to make your case. But I want to make sure that we're clear. You're not saying that we don't exist. You're saying that we're not really atheists, that we either somehow or another, we actually act or we do believe in God. And are you saying that maybe we're not aware that we believe in God? I'm not starting your clock
yet. I have the propositional attitude that atheists do not exist. That's how I would characterize it.
It's really frustrating because I'm trying to ask you questions that clarify what your position is so that mm-hmm. I can start you to defend it. And yet you keep not answering the mm-hmm. question. So the question is, are you saying that those mm-hmm. of us, here I am, let's just go with me and Jim. We say we're atheists. We say we don't believe in God. You're telling us, mm-hmm. is it your case?
I don't believe you.
Okay, I don't care if you believe me. Is it the case That's that you fine. Think that, is it your case that you think we're lying or deceived and we secretly do believe in God? And how can you prove that? Start your minute.
Well, if somebody claims God exists, and a skeptic says, I don't believe you, they're not necessarily claiming that God does not exist. They're not necessarily claiming that you're lying. It's just that they don't believe the proposition or assertion that's presented to them. Now, if you and Jim are going to claim that you two disbelieve or lack belief in God, I would just simply say that I reject your claim. I disbelieve your
okay.
claim.
Okay. In that case, I reject your call. Thanks for wasting our time. It doesn't matter to me whether you believe us or not. Appreciate it. Moving on.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
nothing.
Yeah. Your belief in the claim has nothing to do with the truth of the claim, right?
I took time out for somebody who was trying to claim that the people in the clergy project don't exist, that there's no such thing as ex-Christians, that there aren't that. But if all you're going to say is that you don't believe me, I don't give a shit. You completely waste. I thought you were supposed to be a professional debater who'd been waiting 24 years to come in here. And I was supposed to be nervous that you were going to completely clean my cock. And all you say is, if Jim and I say we don't believe in a God, you don't believe us. Well, congratulations. I have no interest in convincing you personally that I'm telling the truth. I'm sad about your unwillingness to accept that when somebody tells you something that they are convinced of or not convinced of, that you think they're being dishonest. Because when you tell me you believe in a God, I believe you. I believe that you believe and sincerely believe that there is a God. I just don't believe that your claim about a God is true. And see, you tried to do something similar and failed epically. So I guess we're going to get announcements.
It's kind of like this. I make the claim that my background is green screened. And Matt can say, I don't believe you. That has nothing to do with the fact that my background is, in fact, a green screen.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with that truth proposition. You can believe me or not. It has nothing to do with the truth proposition of the claim itself. And when it comes to the claim, I don't believe something, the only way you can know that I'm lying is to get in my head or to put a lie detector or do something along those lines. So his claim has absolutely nothing to do with anything. I mean, that was a nothing argument. Yeah. It was a huge, we spent more time in the argument already than it's worth because he was disappointingly boring. And quite frankly, we knew that from his description. So
I don't know what else to do. If you're, here's the thing. If you're going to call in, we have some of the most wonderful volunteers. I'm going to do the announcements here in just a second. But let's skip the order of the announcements. Put the volunteers, put our crew up here on the screen, because we have an amazing crew who works behind the scenes to do a lot of things, including screening your calls. And they want theists and the best representatives of theism to get on the show. You don't have to lie to them. You don't have to pretend to be something you're not to get on the show. All you have to do is make a clear case. And the call screeners are there to help you do that. So when they ask you questions, you don't have to be sensationalizing like there's no such thing as an ex-Christian and the clergy project isn't, or the people in the clergy project aren't real. Because that gets us nowhere. And we can do better. But for those of you who are watching us live, welcome to the Atheist Experience. I know there's thousands of you watching right now. And if you look over in the chat, you will see that below the chat, there is a donation link. 100% of your donations go to support the Atheist Community of Austin and all the programs that we do. In addition, there is ACA merchandise that you can acquire, and there'll be a graphic up that shows you exactly at tiny.cc/merch ACA. And this month's shirt is the OK Theist, You've Got 1 Minute, Convince Me, because the clock has been something that people actually liked and appreciated. If you are also someone who shops on Amazon, then you can support the Atheist Community of Austin at no cost to you. Let me repeat this, at no cost to you. You simply visit tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA, and that will set you up. The Amazon Smile ACA designates the Atheist Community of Austin as your selected charity. So when you go shopping at Amazon, instead of just going to Amazon.com, you can go to smile.amazon.com, and some portion of your expense will be passed on to the charity of your choice. The Atheist Community of Austin is eligible there as one of your charities. If you don't already have one, please consider using the Atheist Community of Austin. If you do have one, by all means, keep being nice to those other organizations. I've been using it to support the Lilith Fund for years. Some of it goes to ACA stuff because I have two different accounts that I'll sometimes buy stuff with. But yeah, that's available there. There's also membership here on the YouTube for 99 cents a month, and that gets you out of any slow mode that we're doing. You also get custom emojis and a number of other things as well. You can also join at patreon.com/theatheistexperience. And if you're not able to or don't want to contribute financially, that's fine, because we have lots of other ways for people to contribute and participate, including watching the show live, interacting with the chat. But there's an unofficial Facebook group that's the Atheist Experience fan group at tiny.cc/FBAXP. And then there's the Atheist Experience private fan group. I'm amazed I'm even allowed to tell you about it. But you can also go to atheist-community.org. That's the website for the ACA. It's been revamped. There's still a lot going on and working on it. That's where we'll be posting news about what's coming up, what the ACA is doing, what's going on at the building, what's going on with the shows. We'll post, there are policy statements up there that go through our policies, any apologies or corrections, things like that will be on the website as well. And if you have feedback, questions, concerns, criticisms, whatever, your primary email is going to be tv@atheist-community.org. There are other email addresses if we need to move beyond that, but by and large, tv@atheist-community.org, get to somebody who can get your email to the right people, I hope. And that's all I've got for announcements. Jim, did you have an announcement to add?
No, not really. Although cool. We normally do these types of announcements after the first call, and I think we should have waited for the next call because that really wasn't a call.
But. Yeah, it's frustrating, but we'll take another call now. We've got, oh my goodness, it's Hamish in Scotland. Pronouns are he, him. How you doing, Hamish?
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening. So I would first like to congratulate your country on taking the first steps to banning abortion completely.
I'm not interested in your congratulations. I'll be doing everything to oppose it.
Yeah, pretty much off on that.
It is hard to imagine a worse crime than to murder an unborn baby before it
really?
Is even left.
Your God's done it multiple times.
Now you're muted. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, your God's done it multiple times. So apparently your God is evil and commits the worst crime on several occasions.
I can think of, first of all, it's not a crime, but I can think of countless crimes that are worse than aborting a fetus, not allowing a fetus to use your body without your consent, not giving up your bodily autonomy. I can think of countless crimes that have been done. Almost everybody who's everybody who's in prison for maybe any, actually, no, even then they broke the law. So they weren't breaking the law. And abortion isn't a crime. It shouldn't be illegal. It's healthcare. It is essential. And I'm not interested in your congratulations nor your proselytizing on its behalf. So do you have something else that you wanted to address or some argument that you wanted to make on this behalf? That's my curiosity.
Why do you believe it is morally acceptable to kill a baby in the womb?
I think it's morally acceptable to terminate a pregnancy if you don't want to remain pregnant, period. I don't know why you want to give special rights to a fetus. Why are you arguing to give special rights to a fetus?
It is simply the right not to be killed.
No, it's not. No. Not simply the right not to be killed. It doesn't have the right. Do you have the right, Hamish, to use my body without my consent?
No.
But you want to grant the fetus the right to use someone's body without their consent, right?
The mother created the baby.
Hamish,
yes.
Answer my question.
Yes.
Do you want to give the fetus the right to use someone else's body without their consent?
Yes, this is the will.
Then you are arguing, as I said, to give fetuses special rights that other human beings don't. And I'm
turning women into cattle. You're making women no better than cattle. And
even more, it is not a crime in the state of man.
I didn't understand a word you just said.
I said, even if it is not a crime under the laws of man, it is a crime under God.
Nobody gives a fuck about whether or not your God approves of abortion, even though in the book that you point to, they provide the recipe for an abortifacient and he destroys most of the world. Your God is a monstrous thug, and I couldn't give a fuck what he thinks, even if he were real. So I definitely don't care if you want to come in and tell me what you think your God wants, because you can't prove that your God exists or wants anything. So I don't give a fuck about your opinion.
And the Bible is pretty clear on when life starts. Life starts at first breath. Babies in the womb, fetuses don't breathe.
They're not
even
counted.
They haven't taken their first left.
They're not even counted in censuses until they're 30 days old.
Right.
There's a different penalty in the Bible for causing a miscarriage than there is for killing a person. Nothing in the Bible holds a fetus equal to a human being. So your book does not support that. Only your interpretation of it does. And I couldn't give a rat's ass about your interpretation. Your God sucks, and so does your interpretation. Sorry, what?
How do you, as an atheist, justify killing the baby then?
We just explained it to you. Were you not listening?
You believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, but you believe that one person does not have the right to use another person's body.
Correct.
Without their permission, yes.
Under any circumstances.
Correct. Even if it means the person who needs to use the body dies. So, for instance, you could take the case of kidneys. Nobody has the right to come and demand the use of your kidney without your permission to give it to them. Kidney, uterus, doesn't matter. It's a body part. Nobody has the right to do that. Because if you give them that right, then what you end up doing is turning the victim of that into cattle. Cattle don't have the right to decide when they reproduce and when they don't.
We actually treat cattle better than that. We actually treat our pets and livestock generally better than we treat each other, because we're not even protecting the right to govern when you're going to die with dignity, which is something that all of my pets have had the option to do, and yet I won't.
Right.
So have you got anything other, Hamish, than you personally think that your God is opposed to it? Because if that's all you've got, I'm not interested. Okay, thanks.
Thank you for playing.
This is really easy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you ask people questions and they answer them and then you move on.
Yep.
Because even if the God of the Bible existed, I don't care what his opinion is on anything, but he doesn't exist. There's no reason to think that he exists. And the Bible doesn't say what Hamish wishes that it did say. Trust me, if the Bible was clearly, explicitly anti-abortion, things would have run very much differently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
On that note, while we're waiting for a quick refresh, I want to get to the announcements after the second half of the announcements. And that's this. If you want to have those discussions, and I can't guarantee that you're going to find someone who cares to debate abortion with you, because go watch my debate from like 2012 or something against Christine Krzyzanecki, where there's two secularists arguing on abortion, because of all the debates I've done, it's probably one of the ones I'm most proud of as far as dismantling the other side. But if you want to get involved in debates and stuff like that, you can go to the Atheist versus Theist debates group, which is at tiny.cc/AXP fan debates, and hopefully find some people there that can either actually have a discussion or a debate with you or help you out with your pet arguments. When somebody called into, I do a show on Wednesdays elsewhere, but somebody called into that show specifically with like a pet argument that they had that they wanted feedback on. and I gave it, and it was a headbutting call, but we ended up, you know, coming to agreement and had fun. There are people out there who can help you prepare to do better debates, including, you know, my own work with Atheist Debates Project and other stuff, but check out that debate group. Also, in addition to this program and Talk Heathen, which you probably, hopefully, saw earlier today, the ACA produces a number of different shows, including our flagship show, I'm obligated to say, Johnny's my friend and I love him, our flagship show, The Nonprofits, which airs Sundays at 3 in between Talk Heathen and The Atheist Experience. And there is a one-stop shop for all of your podcasts at tiny.cc/AEN podcast. So that's plural. That's the audio version of everything that we produce from Talk Heathen, AXP, Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, and any special podcasts that we do, and any new ones that'll be coming up in the future will also be there with the rest of it. That's where you can find all the ACA stuff. I already put the crew cam up, but God damn it, our crew's good enough to put up twice. So put the crew up. And in addition to those people that I see, some of whom are mad that I put them up twice because they just want to stay hidden behind the curtain, there are also moderators in chat. There are people taking notes and doing timestamps so that these videos can be chopped up into interesting and useful segments. And you might want to put a timestamp right here because we're moving on. We have Gigi in Florida, pronouns as she, her. Gigi says she believes in God due to intuition. Is that the case? Welcome, Gigi.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, I believe in just like a deist God because of an intuition. So like, I don't try to justify it. So I just take it to be like an irrational belief. Just like your belief that the external world exists, you can't justify. You don't know that you're talking to me right now. So aren't we just both on like, I'm not guilty of anything, you aren't. So how would you argue against that?
Except that in order for the two of us to have a conversation, I necessarily need to be correct about there being an external world. And everything that I do every single day is interacting with this external world that I experience. I can't prove that I'm not in a matrix. I can't solve the problem of hard solipsism, but I know that if I try to pretend that I'm not experiencing the real world or the world I experience, if I try to go in opposition to it, that's bad for me. Like I can't just put my hand on the stove and not get burnt if it's on. I can't cross a busy intersection and not get hit by cars. I've been damaged by the real world. So while I don't have a problem for hard solipsism, the acceptance of an external world is pretty much a necessity and not, you know, you can't prove it 100% because you're stuck, but that doesn't mean that it's irrational. All of the evidence that I have points to an external world. What evidence is there beyond intuition that points to a God of any sort? And in this case, you're talking about a deistic God, which means you've intuited that which is non-intuitable, because a deistic God does not intervene in reality in any detectable way. So there's nothing that you could detect. So how is your intuition of a deistic God anything more than wishing there was a God?
Well, an intuition is just to accept a proposition without, that you don't have a defeater for, without justification. And I don't see how I'm in any, first of all, I didn't say that it was irrational for you to believe in the external world. I'm just saying that you don't know it. And all that things.
I do know
that about it.
Here's the thing, Gigi. I do know it. Knowledge does not require certainty.
How would you have evidence for it that doesn't beg the question?
I'm sorry. Knowledge does not require certainty. I have a belief that is rationally justified by actual evidence that I experience. There's no solution to the problem of hard solipsism, but that doesn't mean that accepting that I live in a world interacting with you and others is on the same evidentiary footing as a deistic God. I'm not intuiting the external. I am actively experiencing it and testing it.
Well, that's begging the question right there. But because I'm asking you how.
No, there's nothing that begs the question there. I'm not declaring I'm not declaring that I am absolutely certain that the external world that I experience is in fact an external world and is in fact absolutely real. The fact that there's no path to absolute certainty and the fact that we cannot dispute hard solipsism does not fucking mean that we're begging the question when we believe that the world we interact with is real.
I was going to address the certainty thing. You cut me off. Certainty is just a level of confidence that's irrelevant.
I didn't cut you off, Gigi. Gigi, now you're muted. I didn't cut you off. You interrupted before I was done. That's what actually happened. Let's be honest about this. Now, if you intuit a God, what is the justification? If all you need is intuition, can your intuition be wrong? And what's the likelihood that it's wrong on any given proposition?
Well, I don't think that we have access to how likely or unlikely a deist God is, because it's an unfalsifiable hypothesis. So
then why would you believe anything that's unfalsifiable?
You're not letting me talk. You keep interrupting me.
Yeah, I know. That's part of it being on my show. When you make a statement and I have an objection or need clarification, I interrupt to get the objection or clarification.
I don't understand.
Because otherwise you just get to keep talking and your nonsense doesn't get rejected.
I don't understand how you could claim to know the external world exists. What kind of justification could you have? Please don't interrupt me. What kind of justification, sir, could you have that...
Now you're muted. I was sitting here quietly and patiently. Jim, by the way, hasn't said a word.
I don't really need to at this point.
And now you decided to get all snarky about don't interrupt me. Here's the thing. Accepting that there's an external world that you interact with is an axiom that is a matter of necessity, because otherwise you die. Otherwise, if you think that you're not interacting with reality, you're going to get hit by the bus. You're going to take... Now, yes, everything that I'm saying comes in through my sense data, and I cannot demonstrate conclusively to you or me or anybody else that I'm not living in some sort of matrix. But I'm talking about the rules of the matrix that I experience, and you are asking me what evidence I have. And the evidence of that is experience and testable. It is, if reality isn't subject to experiential evidence, then what you're saying is, you know, that nothing can be known and nothing can be rationally justified. Now, if your position is that nothing can be known and nothing can be, we have a disagreement about what knowledge and rational justification is. But what it means is, yes, your position on a deistic God is no more or less rational than any position on anything, because you've thrown out rationality. Oh, you hung up.
No. Yeah. So the reality that I experience is remarkably consistent and remarkably testable. And so there are a number of claims that I can test. And as long as the test is repeatable, then we can pretty much conclude that that is true, because it's in concordance with reality, the reality that I experience. Dropping a pencil, things orbiting, all that kind of good stuff, everything that we know. Intuition, on the other hand, is also testable, but it's testable and does not show a good, valid pathway to truth. You cannot intuit yourself into understanding quantum physics, for instance. You can't intuit yourself into understanding a whole lot of things. You know, back in the 17, 1800s, they believed that frogs came from mud. Why? Because they saw frogs jump out of mud. And so they thought mud somehow created frogs. That, of course, is completely wrong. They do that intuition and simple observation. They didn't observe well enough what was actually going on. That frogs are laying eggs, et cetera, et cetera. This is... Intuition is not a good pathway to truth in the world that at least I experience. I don't know about you, Matt, but yeah, intuition just, it's not a good pathway to truth in a reality that we experience that is testable repeatedly for almost everything we know fundamentally.
So for clarity, for those people who might not have followed along on all this, the problem of hard solipsism is, how do you show that reality is real? And how do you show that logic is reliable? And we can't. Identity, non-contradiction, excluded middle, those are axioms that we just have to accept that we can never prove, because in trying to disprove them, you would have to assume that they were true and you would end up in a contradiction. And without them, there's no problem with a contradiction. So all of rationality falls apart. When it comes to the real world, if your position is, as Gigi's was, that you believe in some God as merely by intuition, and that this is no less rational than my belief that the external world exists, we're no longer operating in the same realm, because my belief that the external world exists is only held to the degree of confidence that I can demonstrate. If you show me that I'm living in a matrix, I'll accept that. But it's the default one, because if you stop believing in reality and start thinking I can cross the street through traffic and I can drink poison and all these other things, you will cease to exist. Now, the response to that is you don't know that. That's just what your experience tells you. Yes. But I think that there's a difference between experience and intuition, because at the end of the day, Gigi's position is denial of any reality, any reason, because if you hold that your intuitive belief that there's a non-interventionist deistic God that is definitionally untestable and does not manifest in reality in any detectable way is on equal footing to things that do appear to, at least appear to, manifest in reality, then you're nuts. I mean, you have sacrificed all of reason, and that's fine, but it doesn't mean that your God belief, your deist belief, is on footing. I mean, at least I can point to independent confirmation. Yes, it's still coming through my senses. I can point to what I'm experiencing. Yes, it's still coming through my senses. But you can't even point to anything coming through your senses. It's just an intuition. I don't give a shit about intuition. Intuition doesn't prove anything ever. That's not how we do stuff. Science doesn't rely on intuition. Science does, however, rely on the presupposition that reality exists and that we share it, so that I can go and investigate something and report to Jim. Jim can investigate it, report to me. We can then share our results and have other people report it. To simply say, well, you know, you can't prove reality's real. Now you're in complete time waster mode. Not only is Gigi's God useless, irrelevant, pathetic, the deistic God is not even worth discussing because it's not going to matter. Its existence or non-existence doesn't impact our reality in any way. But if you want to try and claim that you intuited a deistic God and that this is on equal footing with people's actual direct experience of reality, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. Here we go with Ben. Pronouns are he, him in the UK. Wants to talk about abortion. It says, and this is highlighted here, Ben, that you say a woman makes a choice to have sex. What if they don't?
Hello, Matt. Yeah. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Did you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you. Yep. Yeah.
So it says here, you said that a woman made a choice to have sex. What if they didn't make a choice?
That's true. And in those cases, I think that should be a special consideration. But
okay. So now your issue here is that life has value unless it's life produced by rape?
No. But it still has value if it's by rape, but obviously we should litigate for those certain circumstances because it's, why? This.
If somebody is raped and carries their baby to term, it's a person just like anybody else, right?
Yeah.
So how can you be anti-choice but make exceptions for rape? Do you make an exception for incest too?
No, I would say it's not. If I'm honest, and I'm coming this from, I don't believe in God, me personally. Sorry, are you talking? I'm watching it on the screen, so.
Don't watch on the screen. That's like volume. 30 seconds behind. Stay with me on the phone. Focus.
Okay.
So.
Look, the thing is, I don't know the answer to this, and this is why I'm bringing up to ask about it, in terms to talk about it. But
okay, it's really easy, Ben. I swear this is really easy. Do you think that any person should have the right to use somebody else's body without that person's consent?
I think that's wrong. I think that's the wrong way to look at it because...
No, I'm asking you a question. I'm asking you a question. Do you think that
you're framing it in a way that it's like...
I don't give a shit.
Yes.
Answer the question. I'm sorry, Ben, that the question is really fucking inconvenient position.
I don't think so, obviously. No, I don't think so, obviously. Nobody should be able to use anybody's body without consent.
Ben, if you don't think that a person should have the right to use somebody else's body without their consent, then your only viable position is to be allowing women to make the choice or pregnant people to make the choice to no longer remain pregnant, because otherwise you're arguing for special rights for fetuses.
But is a fetus not a human being?
Doesn't matter. You just said that you are not in favor.
Doesn't matter.
Ben, listen, for fuck's sake. You just said that no person should have the right to use somebody else's body without their consent, correct?
That is correct. But
if a fetus a is in fact a person,
because
if
a
fetus, oh my God,
you're framing it.
If you're not going to listen, I'm going to drop you. You agreed that no person should be able to use another person's right body without their consent. If a fetus is a person, it still falls under that. And if a fetus is not a person, now you're basically arguing that someone or something that is not a person should get to use somebody else's right body without their consent. So how do you get around that, Ben?
Oh, sorry. Well, what do you mean? How do I get around it? Well, yeah, but then if a fetus is a person, then is that using that woman's body without consent?
Yes.
That's the point.
If a woman, if a pregnant person doesn't want to remain pregnant and you force them to, you are now forcing them to allow someone else to use their body without their consent.
Okay. So if a fetus is a person, you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that at all. I'm saying that for the sake of argument, even if a fetus is a person, you have already said people don't get to use other people's body without their consent. So even if a fetus were a person, even if a fetus were a person, it wouldn't have the right to use somebody else's body. I don't think a fetus is a person, so it definitely doesn't have the right to use somebody else's body.
Okay, fair enough. But then you know, that's fine. I don't think that though, because you know, a fetus is a person. I think
it's not. So, but even if it is, even if it is, let's stop with the personhood doesn't fucking. Then I will. For the sake of this discussion, I will grant you your view that a fetus is a person is 100% correct for this discussion. And yet you've already acknowledged that no person should be able to use another person's body without their consent. So it doesn't matter if it's a person; it doesn't get to use somebody else's body.
Know that it's not the fetus using the other person's body.
It absolutely is. If a fetus could survive outside of that person, then it would. Abortion isn't the right to kill or terminate a pregnancy. And pregnancy terminations can result in a dead fetus because a fetus can't survive without the pregnant person's body providing it with nutrients and sustenance. And okay. Go ahead.
No, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm watching you on the screen. I'll turn it off. I'm listening to you now. Sorry.
Yeah. And you realize that there are a number of pregnancy types that where an abortion is the only responsible thing to do to save the life of the mother, right? Because that's all it is. It's terminating the pregnancy. And if you terminate the pregnancy before science is able to support the child, that's a problem, but that's a problem science needs to solve. And until it does, yes, that is the unfortunate result. But
yes,
I mean,
in principle, I understand that, but at the same time, men and women, you know, they obviously have natural processes that they go through. One of them is producing the next generation, which is, you know, people, you know, yes, I understand that there's rape. I understand that there's edge cases where
this is where you're missing the point. Yes. Men and women have biological processes, but the choice to allow someone to use your body lies with the person who owns the body, not with anybody else. So, for instance, if I needed a kidney and was going to die without a kidney, do I have the right to demand to use your kidney?
No, obviously not.
Okay, so what's the difference between a kidney and a uterus?
Sorry, say again.
From a body part perspective, they're just a body part, right? They're just a part of your body. So if I don't have the right to use your kidney to support my own life, why does any other human being have the right to use someone else's uterus to support
their
life?
Because if I was a woman and I made a choice to have sex with someone that I knew would create
a life. See, this is the problem. Choosing to have sex is not the same as choosing to get pregnant.
And choosing to get pregnant is not the same as choosing to stay pregnant. Ben, I'm talking. Okay, Ben, now you're not talking. Consent to sex is not consent to pregnancy. It is consent to the risk of becoming pregnant, and one of the ways to assess risk is an abortion. Consent to becoming pregnant is not consent to remaining pregnant, because you could very much want to have a kid, and then it turns out that it's a significant health risk to you to carry a child to term. Consent to sex is not consent to being forced to remain pregnant against your will. Please stop saying that it is. Those are not the same.
Okay. The one thing I would say, though, is that women have such access to birth control now.
No. So like, are you saying that all birth control is 100% effective?
No, I'm not saying that.
Are you in favor of abortion for someone who gets pregnant despite taking the appropriate precautions?
I don't really have an opinion on it because
don't bring it up because it's stupid. It is stupid to say, hey, they could have taken contraceptions. First of all, some people are allergic to them. Second of all, why is the onus on the woman to do that? Why don't you go get a vasectomy and remain sterile until such time as you can't possibly force someone to get pregnant? Because I'll tell you this, what you're missing.
Well, first of all,
what part of I'm fucking talking is too difficult here?
Okay, sorry.
Because what you don't seem to be getting is that this is about privacy and individual autonomy. The second you say that you and the government, which is us, have a right to force someone else to be pregnant against their will, then you are saying they no longer have bodily autonomy. And if you're saying that it's because there's a life involved, well, what about all those privacy issues where there is no life involved? If raping someone causes less harm than killing a fetus, should we allow rape?
Yeah, but the thing you listed out is that...
You said, I'm so fucking done with you, Ben. I just asked you if we should allow rape, and the first words out of your mouth were, That either means you weren't listening.
Obviously we shouldn't allow rape. No. Okay, yeah, we shouldn't allow rape. But you're framing it in such a way where you're framing all this stuff where it's like, oh, people have to have sex and have to have, like, you know, things that counteract that. Nobody has to have sex. Nobody's making people have sex.
Nobody should be right? fucking you, that's for sure.
Don't have sex.
Absolutely nobody right? should be having sex with you. Because you don't respect you don't respect their rights or their autonomy. Why should somebody have sex with you if you're not willing to respect their rights and their autonomy? You have a vile, disgusting opinion here. And you keep talking and complaining about the way we framed it. I granted you for the sake of this argument that it's a person and your argument still lose. Then you come back with contraception, which isn't relevant. You're not sure what you think about it. You are sitting here arguing against something. Why? What fucking difference does it make to you if somebody else decides to not remain pregnant?
Because you're killing a person at the end of the day. You're killing a something that could be a person.
No, you are removing something that could be a person if you continue to support it, maybe.
Yeah, in principle. In principle, yeah. So, but at the end of the day, you're killing a person.
So, let's go back to the kidney example. Let's go back to the kidney example. Let's go back.
Jim, I'm going to let you finish, but I'm just going to hang up on Ben because anybody who gets to, it's just my opinion. Well, cool. Fuck off with your opinion and stop voting.
Right. Again, and there's a reason why I picked a kidney, right? Because we can't live without a kidney. So if I don't get if I need a kidney and don't get a kidney transplant, I die. That's the exact same situation we're put into with abortion, right? If we don't have a scientific way, a medical way to keep a fetus alive, after abortion, that fetus will die. That is an unfortunate side effect of the procedure, but it doesn't have to be if we develop the right technologies, right? And even then, it's up to the woman whether, you know, if she wants that procedure done to her body, it's still her body. But that's what we're talking about. Yes, it is an unfortunate condition that the fetus will die. But that is not what an abortion is. It's not the killing of a fetus. It is a termination of a pregnancy. So if you have an ectopic pregnancy and there's just a couple of cells up there, that's still not a baby. It's still not a human. And we still do an abortion. So abortion is healthcare. This is the point. So if you're going to call the show and try to talk around anything other than what Matt and I've been talking about, which is bodily autonomy, then you're just not going to get anywhere because that's the only thing that matters is bodily autonomy, period. End of conversation.
It's like, oh, because it results in the death of a person. Well, so does refusing the right to abortion. It just doesn't. Making abortion illegal doesn't stop abortions. It stops safe abortions. The people who are going to suffer here and die are people with wombs who are too poor to travel, who situate where they're not allowed to, who are in states where they can't get access to this healthcare. You want to talk about people dying? There's plenty of people dying all over the place. There's people dying in wars. There's people dying from hunger. And you think that, oh, this clump of cells that may eventually become a person, it's just a person, so we shouldn't be able to kill it. Well, okay, what other rights does that fetus have? I'm not going to ask you because we have other callers and we've already moved on from Ben. But right. What other rights does a fetus have and should a fetus have? I mean, it's bizarre that some people are just like, oh, this is just the way it is. But hey, we got David in Arkansas, pronouns are he, him. Welcome, David. You had a question about atheists and abortion. So welcome to the abortion show.
Thank you. I respect you. I respect y'all. I do want to say I understand why the abortion topic is coming up because obviously it's in the news. But the thing is, it's not an atheist topic to me. To me, there's not blanket atheist morality. And I'm an atheist, and I am like Ben, and I don't want to get angry or being disrespectful, but
you have a shit position just like Ben. What is your justification? What is your justification for denying a pregnant person bodily autonomy? Why are you okay with granting special rights to fetuses?
If the woman consented to sex, she knows the risk involved with that. That said, I would
David.
That has nothing to do with the question I asked,
and we've already addressed it.
Yeah.
The question I asked.
You big bully, you fucking piece of shit. Fuck you, evil bitch. I'll kick your
Cry for me, David. Cry harder. Cry harder that your rights are being taken away. Oh, David, I'm so sorry. I'm a big bully who's trying to protect the rights of people who you want to take their fucking rights away. Boo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. How dare I stand up for other people's rights and make arguments that you can't rebut? It's the end of the world, David.
Fucker. Nothing says I lose an argument like raging like that. And I have no rational position to stand on when you start doing stuff like that. So, you know, poor you. You're just sad and pathetic and really need to work on your positions.
Yeah. Also, for the screeners, let's drop all the rest of the calls that are about abortion. If you're waiting on hold and you want to talk about this, pick another day, because this is, in fact, the Atheist Experience. It's not all about abortion. And there's a number of other calls that we'd like to get to. So we're going to do that. But actually, I've been missing for a couple weeks. I've been working on other things. There's other things going on. And so I haven't been able to catch up on all the things that have gone on around the ACA. If you haven't been able to catch up either, not only can you go listen to the audio podcasts that we listened or we mentioned before, but the crew has put together a little synopsis of what you might have missed in the intervening week or weeks. Here you go.
Monogamy is not healthy for them, or doesn't feel good to them, or doesn't work for them. That also possible?
Yeah, the old joke is that a sex addict is just anybody who has more sex than their therapist.
Philosophically, you have arbitrarily chosen to believe something, believe in a Christianity, we'll say, and you think that that's superior, but you don't have any actual evidence, any actual basis to think that that's a superior moral system, do you?
How many times have we had callers call in and say, oh, I'm the only one in such and such a town that's an atheist, and then the host says, oh, have you tried these three atheist organizations that are just down the street from you? I mean, it's you feel like you're alone, but we're all alone together.
There's another option, which would be to go, if there's not evidence for the God and we can't explain how we could tell the difference between God and our imagination, maybe you don't believe in the God. Maybe you just go, I don't know.
Secular Rarity said that, you know, we don't have proof for God. I have proof that people exist. So I would like to know, what is 100% proof that people exist?
Are you going to go into solipsism?
Because
I definitely don't have enough time for that. You realize that, right?
And we're back, and we have Tim in Ohio, pronouns are he, him, with something, a claim that I'm really intrigued by about consciousness. So welcome, Tim. What do you got for us?
Hi, Matt. I just want to say I'm a huge fan. I really loved your conversation with Jordan Peterson. So first, I want to start off by defining consciousness as just blanket awareness, right? So the reason why I can believe that consciousness can transcend time and space is due to things like the subjectivity of perception and how that can play into how the passage of time can seem to go faster or slower based on what you're experiencing. And how out of body experiences during trauma can happen. Like, for example, if you're in a car accident and a lot of people who survive the experience report things like seeing themselves from the third person. So I basically just kind of want to use that and say, like, the mystery of consciousness is such that there's reason to believe that while we use it to our advantage in our experience, it can also be present outside of our experience.
Didn't okay. hear anything that sounded like proof. I'll deal with the OBE stuff very quickly. The best you can say about any out-of-body experience, including those that have been meticulous recorded, is that we have no idea what the hell happened. That is the best you can say. It's not proof of anything, right? And if you're going to make a proof of anything, then you got to do something more than that. Every single paper I've read on OBE doesn't give any explanation for what is actually going on. It is simply reporting what other people are reporting. There's no attempt to do anything else beyond that, no attempt to prove anything. So I don't care what OBE says until someone actually does some sort of experiment to actually prove that there's something else going on. In fact, in some operating rooms, they write stuff on the tops of shelves and people don't know what was written on top of the shelf despite their knowing what's going on a third part, or, you know, from the third person point of view. So yeah, we just don't really know what's going on. The fact that everything, you know, some things seem to be subjective, I have no idea what that even means in terms of proving anything other than some things appear to be subjective. So where's your evidence?
So I guess I have a question in response to how you responded, which would be, like, how would you go about demonstrating that if not just by
not
using deductive
problem.
Reasoning?
Not my problem.
But
I'm not
the
making the claim.
The
you are.
No, he's asking you to defend your case. And what you came in with was, you think consciousness can transcend space and time because sometimes our subjective experience of time doesn't seem to track with, oh, that took way longer than I thought, or way less time than I thought. The problem is that an objective external observer measuring that time for that subjective experiencer would show that the time passed at exactly the same rate and consistency that it always does. Your perception of reality is not in and of itself confirmation of that. And the same thing is true with out-of-body experiences or people who seem to experience some sort of, I can see myself from the outside. The fact that your brain creates this impression doesn't mean that it actually happened. And so in order to show that consciousness, see, and this is why I said I was curious about it. I don't know how you could demonstrate that anything transcends time and space. I don't know what it means to transcend time and space, because without time, there is no action. There is no existence. It means nothing to say that something exists for 0 seconds. And without space, there is no matter. And there is no abstractions that arise from that matter. So if all you've got that makes you think that consciousness can surpass time and space is subjective experience while I'm still fucking talking, you know, go ahead, Tim. It was more important for you to say without listening to my thought than it was for me to finish it. So please finish your thought, Tim. And I mean, finish it.
Okay, so what I was saying was astrophysicists and theoretical physicists would both disagree with you. One of those physicists, his name is Donald Hoffman. You can find him on the internet. He himself has done years of studies on the subject.
Have him call. Goodbye. Here's a pro
cite
tip.
Cite the source, not the physicist. Cite the research, not the physicist.
Yeah. Not only should you bring your A game, but if your A game consists of, there are astrophysicists and physicists who would agree with you if you go study this person's stuff and read, I don't want it. If that person wants to debate me or make the case or show up with evidence, they can do that. You need to show up with evidence on your own. You don't just run around, oh, this is what so-and-so said. Okay, congratulations. If you're convinced that consciousness is not necessarily bound by space and time, maybe you should have started with the scientific research instead of saying, hey, we have this subjective experience of time. Sometimes it just seems to drag, because boy, was that call dragging.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem too, is that people don't understand the appeal to authority fallacy. A physicist has a lot of experience, and if they are, and they've done a lot of research in many cases, so not all of them, but those that have a bedrock of that research to stand upon when they say something. But they can also state their opinion. And if that's all they're doing, if what they say is not based directly on their research, then you are appealing to their authority as an expert in the field. And that doesn't always work if they're expressing their opinion. So if in some physicist or astrophysicist opinion, it is possible to know that something or that things exist outside time and space, that's one thing. It's another thing to prove it. Yeah. And so that's why I said, cite the research, not the person, right? Because the research is what matters. The tests are what matter, not someone's opinion of that, even if it's drawn on 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 years of research in physicists and in physics, astrophysics, or any other subject. It doesn't matter. What matters is what does the research show? And yes, it is interesting that some people think that things exist outside of our time and space, multiple universes, all the rest of that, but nobody has proven it. And that's the problem. Some people have proven it through math, but there's a problem with that. Math isn't the same as reality. And just because we do something in math doesn't mean in reality it's actually possible, because we may not understand the model well enough for the math to work correctly. And that's all math is a model. And if we don't understand the physics, we don't understand the astrophysics well enough, then our models will be incorrect. That's all that's going to happen. So, yeah, cite the evidence, not the researcher. Doesn't matter who it is. It's the evidence that matters.
It's really, I mean, bring in whatever. But if you start with, I think it transcends space and time, because sometimes it feels like time really drags, instead of, I think it transcends space and time because there's scientific evidence that shows that this model here might allow for that. You fucked up.
Yeah. And also, I forgot where I was going with that. Never mind. Lost your train of thought.
Anyway, we've got a couple other calls that talk about abortion as well, but from slightly different perspectives as well. So Frank's calling in to let us know. Sometimes you can do something to somebody's body without their consent, which I'm well aware of. But go ahead, Frank.
Hey, you guys hear me?
Yep.
Hey, Jim, Matt. This is Frank from South Carolina. I'm an atheist. I'm not against abortion. Just want to hear some logic on this, because some of the callers before made it sound like there's no exception to being able to use someone's body without their consent. I think there's very special circumstances where you can. Yeah. For example, the first one, if people in jail, they're stuck in jail. You're using their body, making them do things with their body without their consent. I agree with that.
No, Frank. Frank, you don't get to use somebody in jail's body without their consent. That's not one of the areas where you can use somebody's body without their consent is in the case of medical emergencies, when somebody's unconscious and you don't have direct consent, although there may be medical advisory braces, things like that. Then there's also custodialship that parents have over their children, where they can, in fact, make decisions about their child's health. I can force my kid to get vaccinations. The government can also say that, hey, if you're going to interact with other people in public, you are required to have these vaccinations. That's not really somebody using somebody else's body without consent, but it does, in a simple sense, put individual autonomy at odds with, do I want to live in society? But prisoners have rights. And you don't get to just, like, we can't go in and start harvesting kidneys from prisoners. You don't get to use their rights without their consent or their body.
I agree with that, but I think that, and we may be splitting hairs on the words of using their body, but I assume they would not agree with their body being stuck in jail without their consent, and they prefer
Frank, it's not picking nits. They had a contract, a social contract, to not break laws. They broke laws knowing the consequences that they would be confined in some circumstances. That is not using their body. That is not violating their autonomy. That is what we as a society need to do to keep people from violating laws who hurt people. That's it. It's not using their body.
They should be in jail. I still feel like that's somewhat like their body being forced there without consent. And I'd like to bring...
Well, you're wrong. You're wrong. We are not using their body without their consent. We are constraining their ability to harm others. That is not even in the same fucking ballpark.
Okay, I think it is a little bit in the same ballpark. I just talked for a second.
Well, how is it the same? How is restricting somebody's movement and ability to interact with society the same as using their body?
Yeah,
because their body prefer to have their body not be confined to a cage and locked up like a prisoner.
No, prefer they to be would out. Prefer not.
I believe in abortion. Yeah, no, it's not
right. But see, here's where you're kind of
abortion believer. Everyone hears the logic on it, guys.
Yeah,
you're not listening to the logic, Frank. You're just reasserting a position we've already denounced. But go ahead, Jim.
Yeah.
I believe there are special circumstances where you could.
Now you're muted.
Yeah, and Matt's already outlined most of those special circumstances. I think where we're actually failing here is failing to come to an agreement is on your specific use of jail, right? Restricting somebody's freedom is not the same thing as using their body. And yeah, I don't see how those two things are the same.
Do you realize
what you need to explain is, how is restricting somebody's use of their body the same as using their body?
Yeah, because when we're talking about using somebody's body, in the case of a pregnancy, that's someone that is someone who needs to consent in order for their organs, because pregnancy kills people and is non-trivial. And any pregnant person that carries a child to term, their body is changed forever, physically and chemically. None of those things are true for confining someone for breaking the law.
I mean, I agree with that. I'm a believer in abortion. I just want some clarification on the logic.
You keep saying that, and every time I point this out, you say, I agree and I believe it, but it seems to me that we're still using their body in prison. Well, I no longer care if it seems to you that we're still using their body in prison. It's not remotely the same thing. It's not the same violation of contract. What did the pregnant person do to deserve society forcing them to stay pregnant? What act did they take that grants society the right to violate their autonomy?
I don't think they took an act, and I believe they should be able to have an abortion.
What action did the murderer take that forced society to confine them?
He murdered somebody, and that's the exception. When he murdered somebody, you can then use his body stuck in jail. And I agree with that.
No, yeah. You can't use his body stuck in jail. Using somebody else's body, I mean, they're not fucking organ farms. Constraining someone so that they don't do harm is not the same thing as using their body against their will. When a police puts someone in handcuffs, they're not using that person's body. They are restraining that person to protect others. It's not just semantics.
I agree they should be in jail.
Let me try it this way. If a police officer grabs your hand and starts making you hit yourself in the head, would you agree that's the police officer using your body?
Yeah, he shouldn't be doing that unless...
If that police officer prevents you from hitting yourself, is he using your body?
If he prevents me from hitting myself?
Yes.
Maybe if he's physically stopping me, I don't know. maybe.
this is the problem you got. This is the problem you have with same thing with prisons, right? We're restraining them from doing more harm. That is not the same thing as using their body. To use is an action, right? It's active. It has to be active. It cannot be passive. So I can't use someone else's body to have them stand still, right? I can use somebody's body to make them take an action, right? But I can't use their body to just simply have them stay still. It's two completely different things. So I restrain their freedom. I'm not using their body. If I use them as an organ farm, I'm using their body. If I force them to hit themselves, I'm using their body.
But okay. I just assume jail, like forcing them to stay in the cell, eat certain times, dress certain ways, do things like that with using the body. If that's not agreed, then I guess that's the end of it. But I was just kind of wanting just the logic on it. I agree with you guys on everything. Just wanting to hear you guys are very logical, and I want to hear your take on it. And I appreciate it.
People to wear certain clothes and be in a cell and do this is not using their body.
Right.
And they're in there ostensibly for a reason. Although there's a whole, we have more people imprisoned in the United States than pretty much anybody else, and a lot of them shouldn't be there. But
okay, I guess I just figured that was similar to using their body by forcing their body to do certain actions, but maybe that's not considered
what action
their body. Is that where we're at?
Forcing them to not do something. That's the difference, right? So well, I could restrain somebody and not use their body.
Not do something.
Pardon?
You're forcing them to stay in a cell, forcing them to stay in a compound, forcing them to...
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you. I'm restricting them from doing things.
Oh, my God.
No, we're restricting them, and then you're allowing them to do things at certain times. Right.
But, you know, thanks for summing up the entirety of abortion to trying to equate a pregnant person with a criminal.
Yeah.
I assume it was going to go to well-being, where it's about more like about well-being, which is where I'd agree that abortion should be allowed because of well-being and that prison should be allowed because of well-being. If someone attacked me and I murdered them back or killed them because they were attacking me, that would be about well-being. And that's kind of where
I
agree with abortion on that circumstance. Right. I just didn't think that I just want to hear the logic on.
Using
someone's body without their consent, and I agree more with the well-being part of it than forcing the body. That was it.
Okay. Yeah, and apparently you missed the entire conversation about the logic behind it. But anyway, all right, thanks.
Cool.
All
right. Oh, I tell you.
Yeah.
We got more calls to take, and I'm going to take one in just a minute. It's incredibly frustrating because this is the atheist experience. Hopefully we'll be getting calls about, you know, whether or not there's a God or anything else. But I realize today's special because jackholes like Hamish are sitting there celebrating the fact that the United States just went back 100 years or 60, essentially, but 100 in some cases, because some of the laws that are on the books are from like 1850, 1848, 1860 that go into place once Roe has dropped. And it's strange how we keep getting calls from dudes.
Yeah.
Dudes are so worried. Oh, hang on. I appreciate the fact that there are men who can be pregnant. So I'm not talking about men. I'm talking about dudes. And as somebody who's debated the subject many times and done everything I can to promote and defend bodily autonomy and individual's right to choose, it's weird to say, how is this not like prison? When what's closer to prison is turning people who can get pregnant into incubators. That's beyond prison. We can't even do that to prisoners. You can't go in and take somebody's liver or use them or hook them up to be a blood donor or tissue donor, anything, even if it doesn't hurt them, even if it doesn't result in death. You don't get to do that with prisoners. And yet somehow you think you have the right to force someone to remain pregnant against their will.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is that going to fail, because anybody who doesn't want to be pregnant is going to find a way to no longer be pregnant. It's just going to result in more people dying. It's going to result in more problems.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like what some on the left do sometimes, which are like, if you're a man or you have a penis, you just shut up about this issue because you shouldn't have an opinion. No, that's a huge mistake because women's rights are human's rights, and the right to choose and have autonomy over your body affects all of us, not only because all of us have mothers, but because we live in a society with other people cooperatively. So instead of doing the, you know, oh, guys should keep their mouth shut. No. Everybody who's an ally on this issue should be speaking up and working and protesting and standing up. And there were plenty of times where on Twitter over the last couple of days where it was like, you know, cishet white guys suck. And I didn't go after everybody who said that because I get it. When your rights are being taken away, you're going to lash out. And that's what's happening. And things are going to get worse. undeniably, absolutely, things are going to get worse. And it's one of the reasons why I made the call that if we're, you know, if you're planning to go out and protest, make sure you're doing it right. Because things, it's so frustrating to say, okay, why do you want to give special rights to a fetus? Well, the way you're phrasing it makes it, yes, the way I'm phrasing it is the way it is. Yes, but it's a person. Okay. Does it matter if it's a person? If it's in there, as a former friend said, curing cancer in the womb, that doesn't change whether or not it has a right to use somebody else's body. And when we start talking about, well, you know, we can use people's body in some senses. Yes, we can. And I pointed out some of the prime examples. Well, you know, the woman had plenty of chances to use contraception. How do you know that? By the way, the 12-year-old that gets pregnant from an incestuous rape. Oh, well, we'll make exceptions for that. Here's the problem. And this is what I tried to explain during the debate that I had with Christine. This issue is everybody's. And if you want to do this, oh, consent to pregnancy or consent to sex is consent to pregnancy is consent to remaining pregnant, but we want to make exceptions in the case of incest or rape, then if your argument is that it's a person and its life is sacred and it shouldn't be killed, then that's true even if this is if you're going to say it's a person, it's still a person, no matter how it was conceived. The conception part doesn't make it. So if you think that abortion is murder, but you want to make exceptions for rape and incest, then what you're saying is you're okay with murder in a couple of situations. That's the position you're in. That is the whole truth about the position you hold. It would be much better to hold a position that is grounded on something that you don't have an exception. Okay. So if you say abortion's always wrong, it's always murder, no exceptions for rape and incest, while I think that that's an absolutely repulsive position, you are at least internally consistent. Everybody who argues on behalf of life's value and makes exceptions for rape and incest or others, they have an inconsistent position. And this was the important thing in that debate that I did. The secular anti-abortion group sent Christine in. And Christine got raked over the coals because Christine had a position that did not have an exception for rape and incest. And that meant that her position was actually internally consistent, but wrong. But when she didn't do as well in the debate, they basically threw her under the bus. And part of it was, well, we do, you know, the other people who had kind of sent her, we do have an exception for rape and incest. And I'm like, okay, then you have a position that is internally inconsistent. And how do you solve that? I want, if somebody can call in with a position that's both valid and sound, internally consistent and demonstrably true, I'll accept it for anything, for Bigfoot, for abortion, for gods, for spirits, for things existing outside of space and time. That's all it takes for all of them. And yet, this is not going to end. I don't know how many calls we're going to end up taking on abortion and abortion rights. It won't probably be the whole show or most of the show most of the time, but this is the world we live in now where this is actually even more important because the right's been lost. I got a couple other calls here. Jim, you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
No, you want to add something? No, here's a thought. Pretty much everything. Brandon in Kentucky, pronouns are he, him, has definitely called the wrong person in me, but maybe they called the right person in you. Welcome, Brandon. What's your question?
Hey, if you want to skip this, this is fine.
That's fine.
My mother is very anti-abortion, and she believes a lot of false information about it. And I don't know if it's worth it for one or how to talk to her about it to try to change her mind on the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think you have two completely different approaches to that question here. I freely admit I take the coward's way out mostly because I don't know how to answer that question myself. So I don't talk to it about it with my parents at all. I leave that topic completely alone. It is the third rail that will blow up the entire family and we will all go our separate ways and leave pissed off at each other every single time it's tried. And part of that is me and part of that is my mom. It takes two to have a conversation. She's not willing to have any conversation that doesn't agree with her, and I'm not capable of saying, making her see that that position is irrational. So I don't know how to answer your question at all. So I don't do anything. I think Matt's got a slightly different approach than that, though.
Not much. And here's the thing. I no longer have any sort of arguments or discussions about religion or political positions with my parents. That just doesn't happen. They've been very clear, have literally acknowledged that the quote was, I think we are close-minded on this issue and that they don't want to discuss it. Given that, I don't get to bring it up because you can't have a discussion with people who don't want to have it. And it may be that you're just the wrong person to do it. Maybe it's going to take somebody else to change their mind. Maybe it's watching something on the internet or seeing a debate or whatever. It may be that you're too close. to really have any hope of changing mine, because especially with mothers and children, I'm 53. I'm still my mom's baby in her mind. And while I'm held to the standard of being a responsible adult, living life, and they're proud of the fact that, you know, I'm, you know, not in prison and blah, blah, blah. It's very difficult for parents to listen to their kids and acknowledge, yes, my kid is actually knows more than me on this subject, is smarter than me about addressing this subject, and I could just be wrong. That's a difficult thing. And when you add in the conflict where, in my mom's case, her opposition is because she has an understanding of Christianity and the Bible that agrees with Hamish. So they're both wrong about what the books actually say and what the view is. And so I don't even have one-on-one discussions with people very often if I suspect that I'm likely to be able to change their mind, unless there's an audience, because the real value is in the people who are watching right now who agreed with Hamish or agreed with whoever. And they're like, oh, now I see what the thing is. I'm so glad that I wasn't the one who called in, because I'd be really embarrassed to have said something, you know, that silly. And so they have the safety of not being in the conversation. It's a little different when you're having conversations with parents, for example, and nobody else is around. I had the arguments and debates with my parents many times, me versus two of them every time. And we've just stopped. I have no hope that I will ever change their mind, or that is even a likelihood. And so I have other conversations with people who want to have them. It sucks, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah. It's hard seeing her fear her own rights being taken away.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Sure. I'll talk about this after leaving, letting you go, Brandon. Thank you. Thank you very much. One of the things, this was a right that had no value to my mom, for example. If abortion was completely legal, on demand, absolutely everywhere, my mother would never have had an abortion. It wouldn't matter if it was rape or incest or anything else. Her view is one where she just wouldn't have. And I can understand how people can have that mindset. I don't think it's a personal preference at that point. And this is what prompts a lot of people to say, hey, look, if you don't want an abortion, don't have one. Problem is that argument isn't good enough. It's like saying, well, if you don't want to murder people, you know, don't kill them. In the mind of the people that are opposed to this, that's how it reads. And this is why I talk about it in terms of rights and special rights and what a person should or shouldn't be able to do. We have one more call to get to here today, and I'm happy that maybe we'll be able to offer Ray in Ohio, pronouns are he, him, some information. Ray, how can we help you, sir?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I've been dealing with some issues for all of my life. I was raised Pentecostal, and I left the church when I was basically outed in front of the entire congregation. Since then, I've been looking at all kinds of different religions, and then I ended up Catholic somehow. But now recently, I've been...
Is it because you like to drink?
Do what?
Is it because you like to drink? I had a friend switch from Baptist to Catholic because he liked to drink.
That was probably part of it. but recently, I've been questioning things more, and I've been watching videos. I've been watching your show and everything, and things really start to make sense. Atheism does. But my real problem is trying to get rid of that thought of going to hell. You know, that thought of what if they're right? And what if my lifestyle and also maybe not believing in God and stuff, that there is an actual hell that I would actually go to. And it's fearful, you know, and it's very difficult to try to get rid of that. And I was calling to see if you had any advice on that.
Yeah. I absolutely have advice, but I've given mine about 100 times. So I'll wait because I want to hear what Jim's advice is. How do you get over a fear of hell?
I think one step at a time. And just every time it comes up, realizing that hell doesn't exist. The Christian hell doesn't jive with the Jewish hell. And yet they both come from the same book. You can make the case that the hell of the Bible, the New Testament, doesn't exist as well. But none of that really matters. The question is, you know, if you do everything right, and are you still going to hell? Well, you know, you're outed. That automatically to some people means you're going to hell, and to some Christians it means it doesn't. But which is true, we don't know. I think that the best thing to do is to every time it comes up in your head, just say, hey, yeah, no, hell doesn't exist. Eventually you convince yourself that you don't. But I don't know how strong that impulse is within you, and maybe a psychiatrist will have a much better strategy than that. That's kind of what I did, but I didn't have a strong sense of hell either, so I don't know if that'll work or not.
Yeah, and I'm with Jim in that A fear of hell was never a big motivator. I'm the kid who walked down the aisle at the age of 5 at a revival and accepted Jesus into my heart. And then from that point on was just a Christian of some stripe or another. I wasn't super Christian or anything. I mean, I'm just, you know, kind of normal. But the motivation was pleasing God, being accepted and being forgiven and to get to heaven, not so much to avoid hell. As a matter of fact, I don't even think that it registered with me this. I've talked to other people who as kids, when they were told that their friends were going to hell because they didn't believe in Jesus, were absolutely heartbroken and wrecked and cried. And for me, the message that I took because of what I was taught in our church wasn't one of, oh, I'm so sad my friends are going to hell. It is, hang on, I have a way to save my friends from that. I can do something that might give them that opportunity. And so it was not the nightmare-inducing experience for me that it was for others. But I've heard from people who've been atheists for 50 years who still wake up with nightmares of hell. And the best piece of advice I can give, is check out the Secular Therapy Project and recoveringfromreligion.org, because there are other people who have been through this, and you may benefit from some counseling, especially if you're suffering from religious trauma syndrome. But absent seeing a counselor and going down that route, the one question I asked myself and others is how many other hells are you afraid of? Why are you afraid of the specific hell? You're like, oh, I don't believe anymore, but what if they're right? Well, you could say what if they're right for countless afterlives. And if you spend all your time worrying about what if they're all right, you're not going to get much done.
Yeah, I agree. And that sounds like something I should do. Because I know that the first time we went to church, I was 4 years old, and it was a Christmas play. And in that play, the father, he was a sinner, and he went to hell. He died in the play, and Satan came and dragged him into hell. And that was the Christmas show. And I remember seeing that, and that was my first introduction to Christianity. And I was scared from that point on.
That's the purpose.
So
I was lucky. I got to go to a hell house. I got to go to one of the original hell houses, I think. And those are haunted houses put on by Christians where it's basically a whole bunch of morality plays. This happens. Somebody got an abortion and now they're going to hell. Somebody robbed a liquor store and now they're going to hell. Somebody lied to grandma and now they're going to hell. And it's all these little things that are designed to make you scared of hell. I think that I was first fully indoctrinated at such a young age that I didn't have time to develop strong fears at all before I was introduced to the hell concept. So it just became here's what you don't want to have happen. But the way out of it's really easy. You know, just pray the sinner's prayer and believe in your heart and blah, 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 repent, turn from sin. And by the grace of God, you'll be saved. It's yet another lie. It's weird that religions lie to people to scare them, amplifying their existing fears and introducing new fears. But the new fear that they're introducing is one that only their religion can fix. It's any religion can, you know, if you're like afraid of dying, any religion can potentially appeal to that. But if you're afraid of a particular hell, only that one religion has the chance of getting you out. And it used to be said that religions essentially poison you and then sell you the cure. The poison isn't real and the cure isn't real. So what I took to saying was religions make you believe that you're poisoned and then sell you the homeopathic remedy. And once you start thinking about religion in those terms, all of a sudden it's like, I'm not afraid of the boogeyman under my bed. I'm not afraid. I don't think that there's any God anywhere that could give me so much as a hangnail. And that goes for demons, devils, and other things as well. And I hope you seek out some help and you spend some time thinking about it. But first of all, don't beat yourself up at all, because you didn't just decide to teach yourself a fear that you have a fear reaction to. You are the victim of indoctrination and fear monger, and it may take a long time. You may never fully get over it, but it can fade and things can get better.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ray.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Right.
Jim, we have successfully navigated a bunch of calls about abortion, a couple calls about God.
Yeah. I do kind of want to say that I would really, really like to be compensated for the buildup that what's his name was at the beginning of the show that I have now forgotten. I'd like to have something back for that, because that was such a horrendously huge disappointment.
You should go into chat and find everybody who told us that John was a professional who waited 24 years to call and was going to clobber us. They might not start building people up quite so much, maybe.
Yeah, because that was certainly disappointing after that buildup. I mean, we were already kind of disappointed by what he was going to try and call in with. But then just to say, well, I reject your claim, and not really addressing whether or not the claim was true. How sad do you have to be to think that was a good argument, and for anybody else to think that was even remotely an argument, much less a good one? Let's just say it wasn't even an argument. So
I have a tip. Oh, I know that Crew's probably not ready for this. I'm going to do something.
Uh-oh.
Start the 1 minute clock on me. Boom, there it goes and it's moving. Hey, if you're going to call into the show, there's a number of things that you could do. But one of the big things is to think about what should convince people and what actual evidence is. If you're calling in to say that you believe something because the Bible says so, you know that the questions we're going to ask is, why should we believe the Bible? What is it that convinces you that this is the word of God? And why should it be bearing on our lives as well? So be prepared for those questions. Be prepared to not just say, well, the Bible says so, or I was taught in Sunday school, because that's all a bunch of gobbledygook that is nobody's A game and doesn't demonstrate anything. So come in prepared to answer more than just the surface question, like, hey, I don't think the atheists are really atheists. I think you actually believe in a God. Cool. Why? Well, I'm just not convinced. Congratulations. I was never trying to convince you of my personal belief or my personal position that I'm not convinced. You're the one that has a belief in a God. I want evidence for that. The evidence I don't believe is I said I don't believe, just like when I say I'm hungry, not hungry. That's a minute. Got a lot of information in. Hopefully it's useful to all of you. First of all, before I say goodbye, thank you to Jim. Thank you to our crew. Thank you to the moderators, the people behind the scenes who are making all this happen. We will be back. I don't know who's on the schedule for next week. Who is on? Do you know, Jim?
No, I don't actually know who's on the schedule for next week.
I don't. But so you're going to have to just tune in. Just click the like, click the subscribe, ring the bell. You'll get the notifications that will also let you know who's actually going to be on the show. But that's it for this week. Please stay safe. If you're going to protest, do it safely, do it peacefully, and make sure that we are working together towards effective change while we are out there in the real world, because the world is changing, and I guarantee you, things are about to actually get worse. The mission of the ACA, my mission, Jim's mission, has never been more important than when they start eroding away, not just Roe, but church-state separation as in the main decision. And Miranda writes, this is a Christo-fascist takeover. A vocal minority has managed over a period of time to gain a robust power base and fundamentally change the nation that I live in and the world. And we can complain all we want, but they did it in some ways patiently. In other ways, they stole stuff like Merrick Garland's seat on the Supreme Court.
Gerrymandering.
There are going to be occasions where maybe we don't play nice. Maybe the left can stop being the patsies that show up and it's like, okay, I guess we won't worry about the filibuster. We've got actual work to do. One of the things that needs to happen is you need to find the people who don't think their vote matters, the people who agree with your views, who haven't been participating in the system, and let them know that now, more than ever, is a time for people to get involved. Because if you aren't willing to fight for the rights that you feel you deserve, why do you think you deserve them? See you next week. Take care. Right away.
It's time to get sexy, so watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.